tuned into Quick Charge, the high voltage podcast bringing you the top stories in electric vehicles and sustainable energy daily. And it's all powered by Electrek. Welcome to Quick Charge. It's August 20th, 2024, and I'm your host, Joe Boris. We're going to start today off with news from Tesla. Tesla and BYD benefit as the EU cuts planned tariffs on Chinese imports. Electric cars made in China are getting a break after the European Union cut proposed tariff rates on EV imports. Tesla and BYD are some of the big winners set to benefit from the adjusted tariffs. As part of its ongoing anti-subsidy investigation, the EU cut tariff rates on Chinese EV imports to between 9 and 36%. That's down from the initial 17.4 to 38.1% proposed in June. Tesla is the biggest winner here, with its duty rate slashed from 20.8% to just 9%. That's on top of the current 10% rate on car imports. Tesla requested a new rate based on the amount of subsidies it received. China's leading EV maker, BYD, saw a slight drop from 17.4% to 17%. Volvo and Polestar owner Geely got a rate cut from 20% to 19.3%, while SAIC had the highest at 36.3%, down from 38.1%. All other cooperating companies will get a 21.3% tariff rate, which is actually up from the 21% reported in June. Those reduced tariffs are a good thing for Tesla too, because it's going to need to be able to sell all the vehicles it can make out of its new mega factory in China, which it's making significant progress on. Earlier this year, Tesla officially broke ground for the new project, saying that it's now aiming for production to start in the first quarter of 2025, which is still a fairly aggressive timeline. Grace Tao Lin, Tesla VP in China, shared an update on the project today on Weibo, translated from Chinese. Now, Tesla's first energy storage gigafactory outside the United States is also speeding up construction, with a progress of about 45%, striving to run at the Tesla speed and Lingen speed again. The executive says that the plant is about 45% complete, sharing these photos of its progress. It's not all good news for Tesla, however. A Tesla semi-truck caught fire on a highway near the California-Nevada border, according to the Cal Fire Nevada Yuba Placer Unit. Despite frequent media reports, of course, there's no evidence that electric vehicles catch on fire at a higher rate than fossil fuel powered vehicles. In fact, fossil fuel powered vehicles like diesel gasoline tend to start many more fires than electric vehicles. However, since they are a relatively new technology, they sometimes catch on fire for different reasons than gas powered vehicles, usually a battery defect in something like the Chevy Bolt's case. Those instances should obviously be investigated and reported. And now we have news that a Tesla Semi, one of Tesla's Class 8 electric semi-trucks, has caught on fire near the Nevada border. The Cal Fire Nevada Yuba Placer Unit first reported the fire, quote, Tesla electric commercial fire, hazardous material incident due to lithium-ion batteries involved, minimal spread to the vegetation with aircraft utilization to confine fire until it is safe to build control lines. No word yet about how the fire started, but no crash was reported. It's not even clear if the truck caught on fire first or the cargo, as the firefighter mentioned, quote, a lithium-ion battery fire, but Tesla's trucks are known to carry battery packs from Tesla's Nevada factory to its Fremont, California factory. The top comment so far by Doug T. reads, this fire response likely cost over $200,000 in state and local resources, but it was a good move to have an airdrop to mitigate the 1 megawatt of burning cells. I'm glad they were able to prevent a widespread forest fire that could have cost millions. Some may correctly point out that the energy in a gas tank is typically three times that in the battery of an equivalent range EV, but battery fires are significantly harder to extinguish than gas and diesel fires, and the fumes are often more toxic. At some point, I'm guessing that regulators will start limiting battery chemistry types or certification based on EV vehicle class and total kilowatt hours or mass. Battery safety testing and certification is still an evolving field in both tech and regulations, but clearly needs to be ironed out as soon as EV adoption increases and battery tech matures. Now, this is something we're seeing in fire departments across the country. We're also seeing this at racetracks, especially drag strips, which are often owned by smaller operations. They don't necessarily have the money to keep up to date with the latest fire extinguishing and fire safety materials, and they are struggling to keep up with all of the new and different battery technologies that are out there and some of the different chemistries that require different amounts of water or other chemicals to put out. At the end of the day, though, the fact is that EVs catch on fire at a significantly lower rate than internal combustion cars and ultimately have proven to be significantly safer as well. So I think it's important that while these are headline-grabbing incidents, they do not accurately represent what's going on. For every Tesla Semi fire that you've seen, there have been probably 100 diesel Semi fires that you haven't read about. So you can do that research on your own. Go to the National Institute for Highway Safety, all that good stuff, and see what's going on. Now, while Teslas are burning on the highway, Elon Musk is burning his own company by destroying the supercharger network. That said, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and Uber has snapped up Tesla's former head of charging, who was fired by Elon Musk. We're, of course, referring to Rebecca Tinucci, who famously ran the supercharger network. She deserves a significant part of the credit for Tesla's incredible deployment of charging infrastructure throughout several leading roles that she's had in the team over the last 6 years, including as head of the charging team. Her team built undoubtedly the best and most extensive DC fast charging network in the world. And this is why it was so surprising when Elon Musk fired her and her entire 500-person team earlier this year. As we reported, the story behind her firing seems to be that Musk asked her to fire a certain percentage of her staff as part of broader layoffs across Tesla. She complied, but when Musk asked for further layoffs and she pushed back, Musk decided to fire her entire team out of spite. The company ended up having to rehire some of the former team members. Now we learn that Uber has hired Tinucci to lead the electrification of its ride-hailing fleet, according to a memo obtained by Bloomberg. Uber is trying to completely electrify its global fleet by 2040 through many different programs to incentivize its drivers to go electric and the deployment of EV charging stations. And while Uber is lining itself up as an all-electric competitor to Tesla's perpetually 2 years away robotaxi service, Rivian is also expanding. They've approved a major plant expansion in Normal, Illinois, to build the R2. The Normal Town Council voted in favor of Rivian's planned expansion on Monday. The amendments to its site include a new, quote, R2 building, which is a 1.1 million square foot building on the east side of the main plant. It also includes expanding its current 3.8 million square foot plant by about 200,000 square feet, or roughly 5%. The additions include a conveyor system connecting Rivian's current building to the new R2 facility, which is already under development. Rivian was also approved for four new parking lots, three of these for employees, with one reserved for new vehicles waiting to be shipped out. And finally, you know, I like to end these talking about energy, talking about sustainable energy, especially wind, solar, utilities, all that good stuff. Today is no different. We're talking about Maine, which was awarded the United States' first floating offshore wind research lease. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management was awarded the U.S. first floating offshore wind energy lease to the state of Maine. The lease area covers 15,000 acres and is 28 nautical miles off the shore of Maine and the U.S. Outer Continental Shelf. It could allow for the deployment of up to 12 floating offshore wind turbines capable of generating up to 144 megawatts of clean energy. The research array will allow the state, the fishing community, wildlife experts, the offshore wind industry, and other stakeholders to conduct in-depth studies and thoroughly evaluate floating offshore wind as a renewable energy resource in the region. The research conducted will evaluate floating offshore wind's compatibility with existing ocean uses and assess its potential effects on the environment, supply chains, and job creations. Dan Burgess, director of the Maine Governor's Energy Office, said, "Harnessing the abundant clean power generated by offshore wind in the Gulf of Maine will grow Maine's economy, reduce carbon emissions, and help the state reach 100% clean energy by 2040. Already a pioneer in a floating offshore wind, the lease will further the state's ongoing research by providing critical firsthand experience with the first multi-turbine floating wind array in the United States." That's all I've got for today, August 20th. If you really want to hear more about floating wind turbines and other projects that do not bother right whales in the slightest, be sure to like and subscribe for more.